Good morning, everybody. Charlie Parker, alcoholic. What a wonderful weekend this has been. Sunday morning, this is a lot. You know, it's funny because Katie and I have started doing most of our workshops now just Friday night and all day Saturday. Because, boy, by Sunday, I mean, everybody's cooked. Now, this one's a little different because we just go right to bed. You know, I mean, well, not everybody. I heard some people running up and down the hall, but you know, there's not a lot of, you know, there's, I've gotten a lot of rest this weekend too, but it's, these are real good for us too, and I hope what we've been doing is just talking about our approach to either working the program or showing somebody else how to work the program, and we'll talk about that in the 12th step, but I don't know which is cooler, having a spiritual awakening as a result of this process or being able to show somebody else how to have a spiritual awakening as a result of this process. It's they're hand in hand, but the goal is to take, and the goal of my group, my big book study group at home, there's a lot of big book study meetings where you can go and read a chapter out of the book. There's some, the ones that aren't my favorite are the ones where they basically read a whole chapter out of the book and then people talk about whatever they want. You know, they may not even touch the topic. Then there's some where they read the book and they talk about my experience with this part of the book and that sort of thing, and those are okay. There's a lot of those. But we had, the design of our group was to have a meeting where if our founders found a solution important enough that they felt like it should be put in book form, what information did they find important to put in it, and in what order? You know, and that's what we're studying all the time. You know, why are we talking about Jim? Why are we talking about Fred? Why are we talking about him now? You know, and that sort of thing. And you start to get some clarity. But it's not. Ralph talked about it. You know. The book's pretty clear on what self-knowledge will do for me. You know, if I don't take this stuff and put it into action, it works right up till it quits working, you know, and it's this. But what we're trying to do in our meeting anyway is try to get clarity on the process lined out in the book, have that experience, and then carry that message, you know, and we use a study guide with some questions in it and stuff. But I told the guys when we were first starting the meeting, I go, if we go on a 12-step call, we're not taking that stupid study guide with us. You know, we're just using the study guide to get clarity on the process, and then you go talk about that when you're on a 12-step call. But the experience we've been having, you know, last night we finished the amends process and didn't go into a lot of technical, but there is such good information on the amends that it's worth studying. That there's more instructions, I think, on the amends process than almost any other step. But we get to 83, we get to those ninth step promises. And then it says, are these extravagant promises? And we talked about that. You know, Friday night I talked about the we think not. And, you know, and it says, listen to what the founders are saying. These promises are being fulfilled among us. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, they'll always materialize if we work for them. And then it rolls over into step 10 and it says, this thought, what thought? You know, the thought, that these will materialize if we work for them, I think is what they're saying. It says, which suggests that we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. So, you know, step one has driven me into the need for the solution. Two and three has given me the power. The idea. Four through nine has hopefully removed what's blocking me from the power. I love the, you know, cleaning off the windshield analogy, clearing out the pipeline. It's something that's going to establish a contact between if my only shot, if what we've established in step one is that my only shot is a relationship with this power, I'm going to be interested. You shouldn't have to browbeat me to do the disciplines that are going to keep me connected to that power, you know, and but you do. And you know, alcoholics, you know, I think by nature we find something that works and then we stop doing it. It's like you get a little relief and you go, oh, thank God that's over, you know, and then back to self-will. And, you know, that's where this untreated alcoholism comes in, is without even knowing it. There's a thing in the 12 of 12, watch me, I'm going to quote the 12 of 12. There's a thing. There's a thing in the 12 and 12 where it says we can have faith in God and keep him blocked out of our lives, you know. And the way that shows up for me is I'm like, oh, yeah, I mean, God's awesome. God, yeah, I love, but thank God for God, you know. I mean, God took my drinking problem away and, you know, did all this stuff. And I don't need him for this deal with my wife, you know. And I don't need him for this thing with the IRS. And I don't need him for this thing at work. And I don't need him for this thing with my children. But, I mean, if I ever have a big problem, I'll bring God right in, you know. But I just, not today, you know. And I got this. And before I know it, God consciousness starts dropping down. Self-will rises up. And before you know it, God doesn't have anything to do with any decisions in my life or any, you know, anything like that. But the thing is, I'm not conscious of this happening. This is just something that happens where you look up and, our buddy Danny B likes to say that, he says, I still think I'm doing okay if I can still see the broad highway, you know. It's like, you know, it's a little rough out here, I'm getting beat up a little bit, but I can still see the cars on the highway over there, you know. But you know, when we talk about the spiritual disciplines of steps 10 and 11, you know, it's funny, one time I was at the house with the boys and had a pretty good crowd there, about 14 of us, you know, and I go, you know, I must just be an awesome sponsor. And there you can see them going, oh no, where is this going? You know, and I go, because obviously I've sponsored you guys to the point where none of you have experienced selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, or fear in the last 2 weeks, you know, or you're not doing a 10th step, or you're not talking to me about it, you know. And Adam goes, I'm not cheating on you. You know, I'm not saying you got to bring all your 10 steps to me. I really firmly believe in having a crew of 10 step partners, you know. I mean, where if I can't reach Myers, I could call Ralph, or I call Lorenz a lot. I do a lot of 10 steps with Katie. You know, not when they're about Katie, but you know, you need to have a crew of guys. We've talked a little bit about spiritual consent, but did we talk about the terms of spiritual consent? Spiritual consent is where, you know, if Will and I were establishing spiritual consent, I'd be saying, I'm giving you permission to call me on anything you see me doing, whether it hurts my feelings or not. We like to say, I'd rather step on your toes than stand on your grave. Because otherwise we get in these unsigned death pacts, as Bob calls them, where you make an unspoken deal where you're going, look, here's the deal. You don't talk about my pornography, I won't talk about your gambling, you know. And so we huddle up in little people and then we go, how you doing? Here's the deal. You're gonna say how am I doing, and I'm gonna say fine, you know, and you're doing fine, you know, you're doing just fine, you know, and I think there's a deeper level available, but with that spiritual consent, it's always done out of love, and we also talk about this path of consideration, where in the path of consideration, you use terms like, and this could be old hat to a lot of you guys, but you use terms like, is it possible that, or I'd like to offer for your consideration that possibly, because those phrases can go around the ego to the point where I might be willing to consider something. But still, the last defense against that is, when you give me a consideration, I don't get to respond. All I get to say is, thank you, I'll consider that. You know, because my ego wants to defend itself. And my ego wants to tell you the story. And my ego wants to say, you know, because unlike most people in this room, sometimes I drift off track and fall asleep. And one time one of my favorite sponsees, this guy, Chad. I'm going to talk to Tarek about it. I think one year he'd be a really good facilitator for you. But he had the guts to come to me one day, and he goes, Charlie, can I offer you consideration? Because I was pissed off at everybody. You know, I mean, you know, you ever have that? And when it's everybody, it ain't anybody. You know, I mean, you know, where this guy's bugging me, and this guy's bugging me, and I think they just gave me a look, and you know what I mean? Am I the only one that experiences that? You know, and Chad comes to me one day, and he goes, you seem like a guy that's starting to run the show again. And I remember, it makes me, to think about him having to go to take that risk, you know, with his sponsor, you know, to be able to come and, you know, to care about each other enough to go, dude, you're drifting, you know, you need to check yourself, you know. But I mean, and boy, my ego went right into self-defense. I go, well, you little wet behind the ears, you know, you don't get to say that. All you get to say is, thank you, I'll consider that, you know. And it's funny, because another time somebody, one of the guys we were doing Steel on Steel, one of the guys gave Chad a consideration, and the guy said, you know, and I think was it, the Chad goes, thank you. And the guy said, no, what I'm seeing is this, and Chad goes, thank you. And he's like, and the guy's still talking, he goes, I said thank you, you know. Like, that's about enough of that, you know. But all this ties into this 10th step mentality of keeping an eye on ourselves, you know, because if my natural tendency, if this reliance on a power and a connection to this power, as I study the book, we talked about basis a lot this week, but another word that I've found, you know, there's three words that I've chased all around the big book. One of them is basis, one of them is consciousness. You know, it talks a lot about establishing a consciousness of this power, and in 10, I'm keeping it in my consciousness, where it's not just this abstract. Like when I was growing up, they would just, it seemed like the only question I remember hearing was, do you believe in God? Right? It wasn't like, are you hanging out with him? Are you trying to live like him? Are you trying, you know, anything like that? It was just in or out, you know, and the book seems to be bringing me more to this consciousness of the power. And the other word, just to cover everything, the other word is principles. I found principles to be really interesting. I was reading in one of the back chapters, when we started Primary Purpose Group, my big book was highlighted and underlined and border notes and, you know, all kind of, until you got to about page 103. And then it was just lily white, you know, from there, you know. I got, the first time we were going through these back chapters, I got pretty liberal with the highlighter. I was like, oh, I need to make this book look a little better. You know? Now we're on about our seventh or eighth pass through there, but there's a note from Clancy. I was getting ready to speak at their group, and he put a note in my chair that says, you are being judged. I love Clancy. But I was reading it. I'm actually going to pull this thought back around. I was reading in there one time, and it was in either to wives or family afterward, but it was saying when your man has sat down with the family and thoroughly explained to them the new principles by which he's living, he should put these principles into action in his home. And I remember reading that sentence and thinking, I wonder how many of us could sit down with the family and thoroughly explain the new principles by which they're living. You know, it's an interesting, it'd be an interesting topic for a meeting sometime. Anyway, that set me off on a little search of, you know, what are the principles. And, you know, we have those stupid little cards. God knows I judge no man, but they have these little, have you seen the little cards that have the principles on the back? And they have like a principle for every step. And we can't even agree on what they are, you know what I mean? But because some cards are different from other cards. And I even saw one where it said the principle for step one was hope. And I'm like, no. No, the whole idea of step one is hopeless. Yeah. It's like, if I break down step one for a guy and he's not scared and a little depressed, either he's not one of us, or I didn't do a good job of describing it, or he's a psychopath, you know, because there's no good news at the end of step one. So this would be a really sucky program if all we had was step one, you know, where, you know, well, here's the deal. You got a body that can't drink normally. You got a mind that's going to convince you to drink again every time, every time, every time. Really sorry. Try to have a nice day, you know. But as we've talked about, that hopelessness drives me into the need for the power, and then we try to remove what's blocking me from the power. And I didn't know for a long time that's what I was trying to do in that vigorous course of action. Katie talks about the vigorous course of action, 4 through 9, being like a golf swing, you know. And I'm glad I just thought of this, because this was something I wanted to say. My ego can take the inventory process and turn it into an exercise in self-will if I'm not careful. And I don't see it happening. Because the whole golf swing is, because I thought, if I thought the biggest course of action was just 4 and 5, but the thing is, what it really is inventory, take it to somebody else, seeing what's an objectionable, what am I powerless over, seeing the objectionable stuff, and going out and cleaning it up in 8 and 9, that's the whole process. But what I realized that I would do was I would stop. Anybody ever see Charles Barkley swing a golf club? You got to Google it. You'll crack up. I mean, he's got some kind of mental thing going where he's had the best instructors in the world, but he'll get out there and when it's time to hit, he'll go, What? You know, like, but. But that's like stopping at 4 and 5. But I didn't realize, when we're talking, that's what I did that, because the way that shows up for me was I'm doing my evening review. Do you have a resentment? Yes, I do. Okay, let's knock out a little 4-column inventory. But what I would do is I'd sit down at my little end of the table, and I'd write out who I'm mad at, what they did, how it affected me. And I do it, I try to look at it from an entirely different angle, and I'm doing a little sick man exercise, what's driving them, and that sort of thing. And then I'd see where I was selfish, dishonest, resentful, and then I'd go, whoa, I'm glad I did that. That was a close one. I was really getting a little off the beam there. And then, okay, see you later. And God's got nothing to do with it, you know? I mean, I've turned it in, without even knowing it, I've turned it into a little exercise in mental management. You know, and I'm not taking it to God. I'm not seeing what's objectionable. I'm not seeing what I'm powerless over. And I'm not involving God in it at all. You know, and that happened all by myself one day at the end of the table, just like going, wow, look what I just did. You know, I excluded God. And, you know, in some, did anybody ever read the Screwtape Letters by C.S.? You know, it's a real tongue-in-cheek look at how we separate ourselves from the power and this. But there's one where the guy starts going to church, and he goes, oh, I see your client's going to church. He goes, well, this is not good. And he's the enemy, and he's trying to keep us away from this power. And he says, well, this is not good news. It may not be as bad as you think. See if you can get him involved in heady discussions with people that talk a lot of theory but don't actually do anything. You know, if you can organize these kinds of activities, you'll be quite pleased with the result. You know, and so... your loving uncle Screwtape, you know. And I watch those things happen, and that's how I wind up getting separated. The thing with the 10th step, and I'm gonna get to the mechanics of the 10th step here in a minute, but one of the things that I see in working with guys, I picked up a sponsee one time that was 31 years sober, and man, he was in trouble. He was in daily suicidal thoughts when I started working with him. And when we got to the 10th step, you know, he goes, well, good grief, man. If I called you every time I was selfish, dishonest, resentful, or afraid, I'd be calling you 50 times a day. Well, nobody wants to do that, right? But I go, let's start with one, all right? Give me one, you know, and let's see where it goes from there, you know, and because my ego will build up make a package that's not even worth trying. You know, I'm not going to call him 50 times a day. You know, and I go, well, let's just call, and what I'll let you know if you're calling too much. You know, the step 10 says we continue to take personal inventory, continue to set rights any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commence this way of living. as we clean up the past. We've entered the world. How about this for a promise? We've entered the world of the Spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. At the meeting, there's a guy that sits right there that has a 1936 Webster's Dictionary. And we looked up the word function on that. You know, it says our next function is to grow and understand. You know what it said for function? Expected duty. It's what this thing's function is to hold the coffee. And that's what I expect it to do, is to hold the coffee and keep it warm. And what does it say my next expected duty is? To grow and understand it and effectiveness. So I think about this. It's one of the 10-step things that I don't talk about as much, but I talk about it a lot when I'm sponsoring guys. You know, when you're up against the approach, sometimes what's going to be understanding, what's going to be effective, what's, you know, especially if I hear somebody saying something in the meeting that's a little off the mark, you know, if I want to grow in understanding and effectiveness, there's about the least effective way to address something like that, if somebody just straight up mistaken about a piece of something, is to holler at them across the meeting. You know, that is very few of us, you know, just go, oh, thank you so much. You know, second would be maybe to catch them after the meeting. And I've even gone to guys, sponsors before, and said, you know, here's what your boy said in the meeting the other day. And generally, they'll take that pretty well. But I had one that didn't. But growing in understanding and effectiveness is an interesting tool, you know, because especially if I'm up against something that's difficult, I go, how can I be more understanding? How can I be more effective? What's the way, when I was on the other side of this thing, because I don't know about you guys, but I have a bad habit of judging people really harshly for not knowing something that I learned about 30 minutes ago. You know? it's like, once I know it, how could you possibly not know this? You know? I mean, yeah. So how could I be more understanding? How could I be more effective? How could you have approached me in a way that I wouldn't bow up on you? You know, and because sometimes it's like going, well, I used to think this way. You know, like one of the common ones is, I'd say a lot of times we got to be careful what we say in AA meetings, because if the new guy hears something a few times in an AA meeting, he thinks it's AA. You know, and you know, like, this is a selfish program, and everybody does the little AA head bob, and you know, and it's really not, you know. And in fact, if you go through my book, there's a lot of places in the border where I've written selfish program, you know, like where it says our very lives as ex-problem drinkers depends upon our constant thought of others and how we may help their needs. You're like, wait a minute, I thought this was a selfish program, you know. But or the one where what I heard my whole time growing up was the 10th Step Evening Review. How many of you have heard people talk about it when I was doing my 10th Step Evening Review? And then you start looking at the book, and you're like, the Evening Review is clearly in the 11th step, you know? But I've heard it so many times that I'll still say it. Okay? It just comes out, you know, without any thought. And you don't make a lot of points. You go, excuse me, that's the 11th step. You know. So it's like if you, it's a lot more effective. So I go, you know, I felt that way too. You know, and in the 12 and 12, in the 11th step, it talks about all the kinds of inventory that we do. And the last one, it talks about the spot check inventory. It talks about the major house cleaning, and then it talks about the evening review. It's the last one I mentioned. So a lot of people get the impression that the evening review is in the 11th step from that. Is that okay? I want to apologize for going off on the 12 and 12 last time. And especially interrupting Ralph, you know, because that ain't the way we, if Ralph and I, if there's something we feel differently on, we'll sit down face to face, we'll get on the phone and talk it out, but yeah, not sniping each other at the table up here, you know, that ain't, That ain't cool. But you know, it's funny. One of the things that Katie talks about is if I do a public harm, then you need to do a public apology. One of the things I found out that doesn't work in our marriage is to embarrass her in front of a group of people, and then apologize when we get home. You know, and she's like, "Well, that's fine. Now go tell everybody else what a dick you were." You know. Oh, thank God I got her watching me. We were at a conference one time, and a big group of all the speakers go out for dinner, you know, and we're sitting there, and I'm trying to be less selfish. This is what happens when I try to do it on self-will. I'm going to be less selfish. I'm going to try to listen better. I'm going to learn to be a better. And the Al-Anon speaker is sitting right here, and everybody else is over, you know. And so I just said, I'm going to draw the Al-Anon speaker into the conversation. And I go, "So, where are you from?" You know, so I don't remember what I asked her. And she starts talking, and apparently at some point in the conversation, I just went, "Oh, for God's sake." And, you know, I mean, I didn't say it out loud, but I turned because the people over here are having a lot more fun. And Katie goes, "Charlie." And I'm like, "What?" She goes, "You asked her a question, and she's in the middle of answering it, and you turn around and start talking to other people." I went, "Sorry, what were you saying?" But that's the level of self-centeredness I carry around, you know, and that was me trying to be open and caring, you know. And so, you know, it's like, let me act like I give a flip, you know, But it's a you know, baby steps. Selfish, dishonest, resentment, and fear. What are these things we're looking for? They're the reemergence of manifestations of self. Remember in the fourth step, we were looking for a manifestation of self. What we're looking for at the 10th step is when these things reemerge, right? Because these things come back up and we try to clean it up. We watch for them, and then it gives us four very basic instructions to do about it. First thing, we go to God. Then we talk to somebody else. Danny Brown says we go to the throne before we go to the phone. But yeah, it's good, isn't it? He said, we ask God at once to remove them. Now, we're asking at once for God to remove them. We're not telling God needs you to remove this at once. You know, it's not like I get to instruct the Creator, like, "Need you to get right on this one, God." We ask God at once to remove them. We talk to somebody else about them immediately. See, there's nothing in this that indicates wait until the evening. You know, this is all as we're rolling through the day. Make amends quickly if we've harmed anyone. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. And then this last little piece, it says, we get recentered here by saying, love and tolerance of others is our code. And it has to apply to everybody, or it's not a code. You know, a code is a way of living. So these 10th step promises, and I'm going to hand it over to Ralph. I love the 10th step promises, I think some more than I do the 9th step promises, because you know, when it talks about, the thing I like to talk about, and one of the things I do that's really dramatic in a treatment center or in some meetings, is if you look at these 10th step promises, and it says sanity will have returned. We'll seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. We act sanely and normally. Here's one. We'll find that this has happened automatically. And here's the one that used to confuse me. We will see that our attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. And I remember thinking, what are they talking about? No thought or effort on my part. I mean, I've been working hard here. I've been doing inventory. I've been out here making amends and all that stuff. But none of that thought or effort was focused on alcohol. It was focused on self, and cleaning up what's blocking me. And you pop up over here in the 10th step, back to sanity, safe and protected, position of neutrality, without any thought or effort on my part. It just comes. That's the miracle of it. We're not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We haven't even sworn off. The problem has been removed. It doesn't exist for us. That's a recovered alcoholic they're describing there. It says we're neither cocky nor afraid. That's our experience. As long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. I like to do, what I like to do when I'm talking in some meetings or in a treatment center is to say, over on page 24, it says, the fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice and drink. My willpower becomes practically non-existent. I am unable at certain times to bring into my consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. I am without defense against the first drink. So you take this guy that over on 24 is completely defenseless against the first drink. You get him over here to 63, and he does the third step prayer, and he pops up over here on 84, safe and protected, recovered, position of neutrality. And the thing I like to do is go, and we're talking about this many pages of work, you know, between the guy that's taking that third step prayer and the guy that's experiencing the 10 step promises. And that's what we'll run from. That's what we'll avoid. That's what we'll go to do anything to. So I tell these guys, so if you've been trying this deal for a while and you're not getting the results that you hear people describing, give this a try. Get with somebody that's done this deal and say, you know, I want to go through this thing. And if it doesn't work, I always tell them, they're not going to close the crack houses, you know. But give it a shot and see what happens. I didn't go too technical on the 10th step, but I'm going to hand it over to Ralph at this point. Thanks, everybody. Yeah.
My name is Ralph White, and I am an alcoholic, and I'm sad. I am sad. I still don't like leaving parties. You know what I'm saying? I'm still the one that don't like to lead a party. And this isn't our last session, but it's close. And I was telling my boy, Tarek, I had not seen Charlie in a long, 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 long time. And it's been worth it. It's been worth it. I've got a lot. I get to go out and do retreats sometimes. Sometimes I go out and do them by myself. But I'm not that guy. I don't like teaching. I don't like feeling like I'm in the teacher role. To me, you know, on Sundays I get to sit up in the front, me and my brother, but I like to. I'm a participant. You know what I'm saying? You know, with you guys, you think Charlie and I are the people that's been doing the deal, but in communication, it's like baseball. I used to wonder, why is it the major leaguers like fastballs? You know, because when I was playing, I liked the room service, just serve it up, you know, bat and practice. And they used to love fastballs, and I used to wonder, why was that? And then the longer you play ball and the better you get, you realize, and I know some people may not, but I hope this analogy, you know, works for people who never play baseball. But sometimes the older you get and the better you get, you're not providing all the power. You know, you can miss it, but if you hit it, you can hit it a longer distance. And in communication, you can go some places and you pitching, but ain't nobody catching. And it's bouncing back at you, you know. But in this room right here, it's a bunch of, you know, it's back and forth. It's interaction, it's energy. You know, God is in the room. And I appreciate it. You know, I appreciate the in-between times. And, you know, so God's in the room. And it makes it easy to have a weekend like this. And, you know, I've been getting so much out of listening when Charlie shows up. And always been, I forget how long ago we met each other. But he's one of the men. He's one of the men. Interesting. We're at the 10th step now. We've entered the world of the spirit. I'm in a different place. Something happened. Talked about working with manual tools. Now we're working with the power tools for real. Picked them up. I'm out. I haven't totally wiped it, but I got a lot of power flowing in now. I'm not blocked. I'm not as blocked. So now, why is this inventory process different and quicker than the other one. The first inventory process was manual labor. When I start doing inventory process at the 10th step, powered. Power tools. Now, even though I've been equipped with power tools, anybody in here try to use a drill or a power saw or something and you don't plug it in? It's hard. You can't use it. So some people get equipped with the power tools. I have done that before and tried to use them without being plugged in. Do what I say. You know, this ego-reducing exercise, I use it as an ego-inflating exercise. I'm ineffective because I'm trying to use power tools without being plugged in, and everybody sees it. I'm grading up against people. Running people away, I'm hurting them. I'm not plugged in. And so why then, after I've done 1 through 9, I should be good to go now? Looked at myself, looked at my sex conduct, looked at my fears, I've been made aware of them. I've somewhat discarded some of them, not totally, but I've shared some in the 5th step. I've gone to this power and I've decided I'm entirely ready for some of this stuff that I find objectionable. God, do it for me. I've done that. Now I've started cleaning up my side of the street. You know, I'm showing up at places. I'm here. I'm present. What did I do? Can you tell me what else I did? What do I need to do to make it right? I started writing wrongs and I should be good to go. I'm in the world of the spirit. Bam. Because I don't ever graduate from being human. And even though I've done all this stuff, guess what? I still spill stuff. I still make messes. Even though, you know, it's some interesting things about spiritual life. And there are some practical aspects all the time. The reason why I think, right, and I don't run from inventory because now, as a result of doing it enough, well, now it ain't that severe either. But as a result of doing it enough, you know, I see the benefits of it. But sometimes my blind spot in sponsorship is, why are you tripping? Why is it taking you so long to write? Why is it some of the things that this process requires, it ain't supposed to be fun. If it was fun making amends all the time, I run around hurting people. Because I get to make amends. If it was fun writing these resentments out and looking, I'd be like, shit, let me go cuss Derek. Let me go get a resentment because I love writing inventory. No, I don't like that. There's a deterrent effect that's involved in spiritual process. There's a deterrent effect involved in that. One of the reasons, when you've been doing this long enough, I get ready to cuss Derek out, and I say, God damn, I'm going to have to make amends to his. I'll be damned if I do that. I'm going to keep my mouth closed. I'll keep my mouth closed. Because I'll be damned if I'm going to do that to his again, you know. And so there is that effect. So when I enter the world of the spirit, you know, the first thing I do, turn on the watcher. Turn on the watcher. I'm observer. I'm an observer in my life. I know when I treat this kid wrong that works with me at work. I knew it when it happened. You know, I'm sitting up in here. He came at me too many times with what I considered a stupid ass question. And I said, okay, John, you know, go figure that out. A few minutes later, come back. Okay, John. Then he comes to me with some office politics. I said, I'm not trying to be in that. Came at me one too many times, and I went one too many places with him. And used some language and told him, look, what part of don't bring me that book did you not understand? You know, and bam, just tore into him. And I'm like, wow. You know, immediately. Pretty much immediately. Now, here's the deal with a guy like me. Me do full disclosure. Having done this process many times, did this, there are times when, yeah, I know I owe him an amends, and I'm sitting on this. He bought this one. He bought this. You know, the level of the level of self self-centeredness sometimes runs so deep. So just because I've been doing this for a long time don't mean that I'm a rise above being Ralph White. It does not mean that. You don't touch that often. That part doesn't come out as often. But every now and then, it'll still surprise me. It'll still surprise me that it's there. That's good news, though, that it surprises me. Because it did not used to surprise me. So that's the good news. The 10-step promises, you know, Charlie was reading, they're my favorite promises of all the promises in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, we talked in the second step, I talked about how I looked at this medicine. When I start, I can't stop. I can't control the amount I take. That's me. That's a description that the doctor gave. He called what I exhibit a manifestation of an allergy. He says, guys like you, Ralph, when you drink, you get thirstier. We call that the way the allergy to alcohol shows up in you. Yes, I have that. And when you ain't drinking, you keep thinking about drinking. You keep thinking there's something in your spirit that drives you and compels you back to drinking or getting loaded. You the one that sits up on Wednesday night in the house and you call it bored. You don't call it restless, irritable, and discontent. And it's so bored that you got to go to the car and get roaches out the ashtray and unroll roaches and try to just, I got to get something, you that guy. On Wednesday, some Wednesday comes calling, and you bored. And that book describes for me. Did you ever see Things to Do in Denver When You're Dead? I don't know if any of you ever saw that cold movie. You have to rent it now, though. And in Things to Do in Denver When You're Dead, they had a running line throughout the film, and it said, "Give it a name." And I didn't know. I knew that's why reading the book is confirmational for me a lot of the times. I didn't know that this thing that I had was called. The doctor called it restless, irritable, and discontent. I call it I'm bored. I need to take the edge off. I need something to jumpstart me in the morning. That's what I called it. He called it this obsession. So when I start, I can't stop. And when I ain't doing it, I can't stop entirely. I'm not going to do this. Now, I never said I'm stopping. I said I'm not spending this whole paycheck no more. I'm not starting this stuff up no more. I can't even not do that, So if that be the case, that is the case, I'm suffering from an illness that only a spiritual experience can conquer. And we went through all the other experiences I tried. Okay, I agree I'm taking the medicine. And remember, for me, it seemed like that medicine was hard to take. Now, we've been taking the medicine, taking the medicine, taking the medicine, taking the medicine, taking the medicine. How many people in here have ever had a cold? Everybody in here has had a cold. How many people have taken medicines for their cold? How many people stop taking the medicine when the cold is gone? Everybody, because you don't keep taking cold medicine when you ain't got a goddamn cold. That's crazy. Why are you going to be sitting up in there sucking on some halls when you don't need to? Why are you going to be drinking Robert? Well, some of y'all were drinking. Some of y'all don't. I'm wrong analogy. Some of y'all were drinking Robitussin with Imagine colds, But ain't nobody going to be taking Theraflu when they ain't got no goddamn cold. No, so you're supposed to, but somebody in here might have diabetes. Somebody in here might be on dialysis. You can't stop that. But why is that? Because a cold is an acute disease. Then we have chronic diseases. Alcoholism is a chronic disease. Acute diseases, treat them, go away, bam, gone. Heart disease, chronic disease. Diabetes, chronic disease. Alcoholism. Chronic disease ain't going nowhere. Once you pickle, you ain't going back to cucumber. That's it. That's all. Chronic disease always have to be treated. But I treat it like taking medicine. And remember, for Ralph, when I was in the second, I was like, I know I can't take the medicine, but driven under the lash of alcoholism, facing those, going on to the bitter end, blotting out the consciousness of my intolerable situation or accepting spiritual help, ass was whooped enough that I said, I'm going to take the help. I'm finally in the ER. in the ER. That's how I have to do it. I don't just walk in the urgent care. I had to be in ER. And so then I took the medicine. But here's the deal about medicine taking. Start feeling better. Looking better. First thing to me, start looking better, feeling better, you know. And the temptation is, it is easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. That is why you will hear people often say, and they get 10 years of sobriety, 20 years of sobriety, I used to, in my early days, I hear myself say it sometimes. There are some things that I used to do more that I don't do now, but I have not, but though I've let up on some of the program of activity, I've never let up on the program of action. It used to make me nervous because I used to go to meetings 3 times a day, but I got a life now. I got grandkids. I got 2 or 3 jobs that I do. You know, I've been very active, but that used to make me nervous. You know, and the spiritual program of that, it looks, I tell you this though, that's why you'll never hear Ralph White diminish any part of this program, any part. Because when I went to the Third Valley, who was up in meetings all the time again? Tell you something, when things get hard, 2 things, you know, in order to, you know, for if the alcoholic fails to enlarge and perfect his spiritual life through self-sacrifice and working with others, he won't be able to survive the certain trials and low spots. I'm going to tell you, there are some certain trials and low spots that's going to happen for people like us. And that's a general statement. Just because Bill wrote it, he didn't have a way of knowing it, but he was pretty, but he know people. A, most people have that. B, definitely most alcoholics are going to face it. You know, and it might not be financial, but everybody going to face it. Somebody going to die. Somebody's going to face a tragedy that's beyond their control, you know. If the alcoholic fails to enlarge and perfect his spiritual life through self-sacrifice and working with others. So that's one of the, that's the primary recipe. That's the stay ready recipe. You ain't got to get ready. Stay ready. Self-sacrifice, working with others. Stay ready. And when the storm comes, I'll be able to weather it. Here's the other thing when the storm comes. My experience. Lean in. Face in. Don't be facing out Alcoholics Anonymous. Lean in. It is very popular in some places, you know, to diminish the value of meeting sometime in fellowship. I'm going to tell you, when times get hard, lean in. Talking about things I know now. And when the big wave came on me in recovery, I leaned in. Well, this is the best cut man I know, Alcoholics Anonymous. Fellas, any of you guys fight fans? There's some ladies. Les likes looking at fights, too. I was about to call her Lisa. She going to hit me after this meeting. I don't know why that came up this weekend, but we like looking at fights, too. And and then she got an amen corner up over there, you know. But you know what? A fighter, as important for a fighter as the fighter himself, because it looks like a fighter is in the ring by himself, right? But he's got somebody else that's important to him, too. Who is that?
Corner man.
The corner man. A lot of times they call him the cut man. Alcoholics Anonymous, the best cut man I know, best corner man I know. I know you haven't heard the fellowship referred to as a cut man before, but trust me, it is. Because when life starts dealing you sometimes, don't fight back. Don't fight back. Sometimes you got to take a knee. Sometimes when they come at you real hard and you keep wanting the rest, you know how they say, you know, God won't give you more than you can handle? That's true, but life will. That's why you better have God. And sometimes when life deals you one too many, take a knee. You know, take a knee. And then you go back up into a meeting and we patch you up. We patch you up and we put you back out there. Terry, God damn it, you a champion. Go, get back out there. And we patch you back up and we get you together. Diane, come on, baby, you can do this. You a queen. And we throw you back out there. Best cut man I know. is the program Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, and so I stay close. That ain't woke you up yet? It sure woke me up. You know? He did alarm for everybody up in the room. You know, so this 10th step, 10 and 11. So that's where I live now. And my next function, as Charlie said, so Ralph, you got a job now. Now that you're living in the realm of the spirit, you got a job. And your job is to grow two ways, understanding and effectiveness. I think my job is to grow in teaching and showing. No, understanding. They don't need to be understanding you. They don't need to understand why sponsors telling me what. No, you need to be understanding them. You need to be growing in understanding and effectiveness. My job is to minimize my job is to minimize contentiousness. My job is to benefit. Do you want to be, I say it all the time, do you want to be right or do you want to be effective? I say it in two ways. When I'm doing inventory, do you want to be right or do you want to be free? And when you're in an argument with somebody, do you want to be right or do you want to be effective? Do you want to be right or do you want to be effective? Next job is to grow in the understanding and effectiveness. And then it gives me a recipe and it gives me a template. And I like it. You know, when guys call me during the day, and I have some who do it religiously and I have some who don't. And one of the first things they do, because they turn their watcher on and they call and they say, Spine, something going on right now. And I say, did you go back to A? Did you ask? Before you call me, did you ask God? Let's start with that one. Because I'm not God. And a lot of times, you know, and I like being big daddy in a lot of areas. You know, I like being big daddy. I like being, you know, the guy. I like being the go-to guy. I like people looking up to me, you know. But so for me, it is important to cultivate. I seek humility. I search humility. I look for humility. I cultivate it. It's not a natural state, but as a result of cultivating it for a long time, it's been a natural state. You know, I stay just a guy. I'm not a power. And so that one right there, go back to the power first, dude. Watch, ask, then discuss. You know, then make amends. You know, Sandy Beach, Charlie said something the other day, and he really turned me. Because Sandy Beach had a recipe for disturbance. And in the fourth step, when we were talking about, you know, though their symptoms disturbed us, you know. And Sandy had a recipe, and it was a two-part recipe. We just gonna wait for Brandon to go on and finish all that crackling back there. He's special. He just wanted his name on tape. And Sandy said, and I'm gonna pass it on, even though Charlie now has disturbed me as to that, you know, damn. Sandy said, I have two courses of action when I'm disturbed. And generally speaking, they're true. He said, Ralph, if you're disturbed, and I took it as him said it to me personally, but he just said it. He said, when I'm disturbed, amends or forgive. Amends, forgive. And Sandy had been on this path. I don't like to put people, but Charlie has talked about his own special relationship with Mark. And Sandy Beach, that man had a way, and he had a manner. And Sandy said, amends or forgive. and he went straight to, well, Sandy, wait a minute, isn't it a third option? Oh, yeah, it's a third option, it's a fourth and a fifth option too. All other options still leave you disturbed. He said, do you want to be undisturbed? Now, if they really did something to you, forgive them. If you're disturbed and you owe them an amend, make amends. Amends or forgive if you want to get undisturbed. And that man was one that really talked about growing and understanding and effectiveness. So amends, and then the last piece to the 10th step, you know, is the piece that runs through everything. Remember our pivot point in step 3? Our pivot point in step 3. When we got on our knees, relieve me of the bondage of self. And there is the one thing that we, the one theme that runs through every one of the steps, all the principles in the program, there's a one running theme. Turn our attention resolutely to somebody we would help. If sex is particularly troublesome, turn attention to somebody who would help. You know, for if the alcoholic fails to enlarge and perfect his spiritual life, you can work with others. You know, our very lives as ex-problem drinkers depend on our constant thought of others and how we can meet. Thought of others. Turn my attention to somebody I could help. Turn my attention to somebody I could help. Turn my attention. Running theme. Relieve me of the bondage of self. Pivot point. And so no matter what it is throughout whatever else we're doing, it's attention to somebody I would help. That's the medicine. You know, that's still the medicine. But we bump up against that last piece, you know, and in the medicine taken. And remember I said at the outset, I know I'm not going to be able to continue to take the medicine. But that's before you know what will happen when you enter the world of the spirit. Now, entering the world of the spirit, it says, now I'm going to be on a whole different basis. The second step is consummated now. Now that we finished the ninth step, now we get that second step promise. Came to believe that a power greater than me could restore me to sanity, for by now sanity has returned. So the solution of the second step has been consummated now as a result of the spiritual actions of 4 through 9. So now sanity has returned. Now I'm able to operate. And you know how they say, you know, your brain is broke, don't use your brain. And here to talk about, God gave us minds to think. Now my thought life is directed and it's on another plane. You know, now when I start, so Ralph, start thinking, start doing things, start making decisions. Now start you being guided by intuitive thought. You ain't got to call sponsors and say, do I need to brush my teeth this morning? Brush your goddamn teeth. You know, do I need to do, you know, job? Should I take this? I don't know. Keep me posted. Terry, know when he called me most of the time, I said, dude, you in the realm of the spirit. Keep me posted. Keep me posted. I'm that kind of spot. I'm not the thumb on shit. If my life is unmanageable by me, how the hell is your life supposed to be manageable by me? You know, you went and then you know, we gonna guide you to this power. Now you got intuitive thought, and it says, now being inexperienced at this, we gonna make some mistakes at this intuitive thought. I used to say, what the hell they mean? Being inexperienced, we gonna make some mistakes at this, and then we'll pay for it and all sorts of. Oh shit, I'm lonely, I'm single, she lonely, she's single. I made eye contact with her across the room. Ooh, must be God's will, you know. Clinton, you know, must be God. And then it says, we're going to pay with this all such a remark, you know. And her ass is, you know, on the other hand, she looking at me like, he got that stalker looking. It's like, please keep his ass away from me. So, yeah, that's why also these presumptions, you know. So we got to filter it and we got to practice it. But this deal is about living. This thing, you know, it ain't about losing. It's about living. I did this deal not to be living on a straitjacket. Charlie said it earlier. We talk about the road gets narrow. Understand that, take it in context, but I'm walking on a broad highway. We got a path, but find your walk on the path. We ain't goose stepping down the path to happy destiny. We not lock stepping down. We some people skipping, some people running, some people pimping, some people strolling, some people stride, some people dancing. Find your walk on the path. find your own walk on the path. Find your own. The biggest freedom I found is connecting to this program and connecting to this power. I didn't connect to this. I've never been a conforming guy. And I know this program requires a lot of what feels like conformity at first. And I resisted, but no, I've always been a to my own drummer guy. I still am. Still am. You know, it's and I believe that this thing was, you know, when it was, well, I'm going to stop because we got one more step to go. And I really want to stop because I want to have enough time in the session for Charlie to still be here for a Q&A. So in the next session, I'm going to try to go kind of short because I know you guys will have some questions for Charlie and I don't want him to at least not get some. We're done.